So the Mets won again, and Kodai Senga, with Devin Williams on the shelf, recorded his first save of his career. Unfortunately, Carson Bench did not get that memo because, and I was watching the game on mute here, and I was kind of perplexed by what was going on because the final out was recorded, and I see Alvarez and Senga kind of looking at the outfield, and I'm like, was there something going on here? Was it actually not an out? Is the game over? And then I saw the game went final, and I just kind of went on to doing the show. But during the break, I checked it out on social media, and yes, in fact, Carson Bench threw the ball into the stands. And obviously, Kodai Senga would want that as a something to hang on his wall, on his office, or whatever the case may be, a little memento, the first ever save of his big league career. And Carson Bench, and look, that's Carson Bench. I mean, he didn't get the memo on that one. You know, you're a young player, you're not even thinking about it. And hopefully, either a Met fan down there in Atlanta caught it, or a Brave fan will be nice enough to give Kodai Senga the baseball tomorrow, or later on this evening. Because that would be a cool, but it was very funny. They both had an awesome, Alvarez is like, what'd you do with the ball? And Bench like, oops, I threw it into the stands. But you can't help but not be excited about what the Mets are doing right now, whether it's with their bullpen, whether it's a starting pitching, but most importantly, their offense, which has been the best offense in baseball over the last week, and it has been a beautiful thing to watch. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Let's go to Scott. He joins us in Point Pleasant. What's up, Scotty?
Moogie, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, listen, you gotta rip one free, you rip one free. It doesn't really matter. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I hear you. But I always wondered, because I don't know, has there ever been, like, at least openly, a radio host that has done that during their shift? I don't know about that. Like, there have been instances where we think something has happened that sounded like one, but we were never really able to pin it down. Because, honestly, quite frankly, who is going to admit that they, well, let one rip during a show?
Well, I think that's what makes you kind of special, right? You rip it, you tell it, you own
yeah,
it.
And they say, you know, they whoever smelt it dealt it, and whoever denied it supplied
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Don't try to hide it with the mic. Hey, yeah. Listen, I just want to ask, you know, my buddies and I were talking about the Yanks in decades back in the 90s where they were just, you know, they were fantastic, and they did it with pitching. They did it with guys that were hitting 20 home runs each. Maybe, you know, not the 40 or 50 with Judge and that kind of stuff and everything, but everybody had the low 300s, higher 250s batting averages. And it seems like they're trying to get back to that with some good pitching now. But for all these years, it seemed like the recipe from the 90s did not apply to the last, you know, since
no, it's 09, a new recipe and it's a new chef. It's the Brian Cashman Yankees where it's more about the home runs and the exit velocity and the regular season baseball, which that formula does work, and that's why the Yankees have had so much success in the regular season. But you know this better than anybody. The 90s Yankees was about the postseason, October, and they had the formula to correct pitching and clutch hitting. And the Yankees have the pitching. They have the 90s type of pitching, but it remains to be seen if they have the clutch hitting.
Right. I mean, like, even like Charlie Hayes at third. Like, come on. You can't get one guy that can be Charlie Hayes. You know what I mean? Like, but the clutch hitting, you know, from Tino around to Jeter, the whole
Bernie,
field.
Posada, everybody. I mean, it seemed like everybody on that team. They all had it.
Right.
It was infectious, and I think it was part of the culture. It was just one of those things where I think everybody was like, hey, I'm not going to be the guy that doesn't get a big hit here, and it was just infectious on that team. And like you said, even if it was bringing in guys that were stars but past their prime that contributed, like a Strawberry, like a Hayes, like a Prince Fielder, whoever the case may be, you know, they thrive. Now, Paul Goldschmidt's kind of like that now for them, but they don't have enough of those guys on this team.
Yeah, it took them a long time to kind of get back to this pitching, like, you know,
priority, where the pitching was the top priority. The hallmark of the team. But it's here now, though. And one of the guys, Cam Schlittler, you know, you didn't hear much about him before he got up here. He didn't get the hype and the praise that you'd hear from, like, an Anthony Volpe or some of the top prospects. But Cam Schlittler, to me, is the best pitcher in the American League. And honestly, right now, he's the best pitcher in all of baseball.
Agreed. Totally agreed. It's exciting to see that. And, you know, you just want to get back. I think that the guys are underperforming as well. Like, you know, you listen to the fan, you look at the game, you watch the games, you look at the stats. They're, you know, they're underperforming. Jazz and all those guys.
Jazz, Wells, Grisham.
270.
Yep. And it goes back to what we were talking about in the early part of this conversation. You know, it's a lot of all or nothing. Yeah, Jazz has had his moments when he hits a home run. Grisham every once in a while pops a home run. But it's the little things, and that's why the Yankees struggle in extra innings, because in extra innings, especially in the regular season when there's a runner on second, it's about the little things. And the Yankees are not always the best with that, and they get exposed when they are presented in those environments.
Right. But come the first round of the playoffs, you need those guys to win that best of five series, right?
If it's wild card, it would be obviously best of three. And they could be looking at now, right, Boston's lost three out of four. And look, I think Boston was never gonna stay on the heater they were on. It was absolutely unrealistic. They were like 31-5 in 36 game stretch. So they were never gonna keep that sort of pace going. But I still think that this, whether it's Tampa, whether it's the Yankees, whether it's Boston, I think the margins are very thin. When we get to the final week of the year, Scott, I think it's gonna be razor thin, the margins between these three teams.
Totally agree. Hey, listen, any more than three deuces a day, you gotta go see a doctor, right, bro?
Yeah, I would say consistently, three deuces, yeah. I think if you're like one or two, you're fine. But when it's really hot, like it is now, I think you're good for three. I think that's fair because it's super hot and that causes an issue there. But yeah, if you're daily going three, four, five, six times, I would probably go see the doctor. But once or twice, that's totally fine. Totally fine. 888-808-1019. That is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. The month that Francisco Lindor has been having, and he had a huge game tonight, it's a big reason why you don't trade Francisco Lindor. You know, for weeks, felt like months, the talk around the Mets were, they'd love to move Francisco Lindor. Well, the reality is Francisco Lindor is one of the best players on the team, and what you're seeing over the last month is why you don't trade Francisco Lindor. He is a pillar. He is one of the stars on this team. And look, it was unexplainable what he did early in the year, but now he is, Francisco Lindor, putting together a very strong month, and I expect that to continue for the final couple of months of the season. Let's go to Bruce. He joins us from Brooklyn. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, Tommy. Hey. I haven't called you in a while.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you, Bruce. I hope everything is well.
Yeah, it's great. I've been listening. You're doing great.
Thank you. Great job.
Very entertaining show.
Thank you.
But now that the Giants are right around the corner, I'll probably have the urge to call more often.
Absolutely.
But when I made this call, it was a different moment than it is now. You were talking movies when I made the call.
Now, does this have anything to do with Robert De Niro versus Al Pacino and who had the better career as an actor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Listen, did you ever see Mean Streets?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Did you ever see The King of Comedy?
Yes, I have.
Did you ever see Once Upon a Time in America?
Uh-huh, yep.
And did you ever see...
Let's see if you stop me.
Oh, Angel Heart. Did you ever see Angel Heart?
No, that one I've never seen, and I have to be honest with you, Bruce, I've never heard of it. Angel Heart, you said?
Angel Heart with Mickey Rourke. You never heard of Angel Heart? You got it. It's a must-see. It's a really scary horror movie.
Yeah, horror mystery. That's right in my genre.
Yes.
Lisa Bonet is in it.
I guarantee. Angel Heart. Yeah, it's with, you know who else is in it? Lisa Bonet.
Yes, we covered that. Yeah, so I would say, and Mickey Rourke, to me, I've always been a Mickey Rourke guy. I haven't heard of it, but I'm looking it up right now. It is on Netflix, which I have. Everybody does. It's an OG. Something I'm going to add it to the list of movies to check out. Now, like you said, it's a horror movie too, right?
Yeah, it's real, much scarier than The Shining. I mean, there's no comparison. Very disturbing.
Well, that's a hot take, because a lot of people think, now, I'm not one of them, a lot of people think The Shining is very scary. I don't think it is, but you're stepping on some toes there when you say Angel Heart is scarier than The Shining. That's a strong, bold statement.
Well, it is. I mean, it's more viscerally disturbing than The Shining is very mysterious and very, enigmatic, whereas Angel Heart is more viscerally,
gory.
Horrific.
Yeah, gory.
Well, no, it's not really gory. It's a little. There's a few.
But when you say, because you're using a lot of big words there, and I get a little bot sometimes. What do you mean by viscerally? What do you mean by viscerally disturbing? What does that mean?
I guess you could say gory. I guess gory would be a better word for
violence.
It. There's more blood in Angel Heart than there is in The Shining.
Right.
That's for sure. But one last thing I want to say before I go.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to see De Niro and Pacino in the same movie, I would go with Righteous Kill over Heat.
Heat. Yeah.
Eat is kind of a boring movie.
Thank you. I'm glad that you agree with me, Bruce, because you know what? For years, I've been saying that Heat is not good. I was even going to rewatch it. And then for you to say that it's boring makes me feel better. Because I agree. It's boring. It's not, I didn't like it. But I even with the sort of agreement there, Bruce, I got to go back and watch Heat, though. I still have to do that. But my initial sort of feeling on that was that it was boring. You know what Michael Mann movie I do like, though? And it's, I think it's definitely, we talked about a lot of underrated movies. There's a movie called Collateral with Tom Cruise, Jamie Foxx, Mark Ruffalo, Jason Statham, Javier Bardem, like great cast, Jada Pinkett Smith. It came out right, I believe, after Jamie Foxx won the Oscar for his portrayal of Ray Charles in Ray. So this was where Jamie Foxx was just at the peak of his, certainly his acting career. He's had a great career, but I'm saying that's when he was like probably the hottest because he just won an Academy Award. It's called Collateral. Excellent movie. And I think that's better than Heat. I didn't like Heat. I got to go back and watch it, but I didn't like it. I agree with you, Bruce. I thought it was boring. Now, the other movie, Righteousness, that one, I have to admit, I have not seen. So I'm going to look that one up right now. Righteousness, De Niro, and Pacino. I know, not the greatest of radio, me typing into a computer screen. What the hell do you want from me, all right? What do you want here? And what am I supposed to do? Hire AI to type something into a computer screen? All right, so this is a 2008. The problem with the 2008 already, I don't want to label it, but I am. There was a time period there where De Niro was cold, and a lot of his movies were not very good, and I feel like it was in that time period, where he's now had a little bit more of a resurgence, because I thought The Irishman was awesome. Dirty Grandpa. Like, there was a couple of hits that he, or movies that he had. What was the one with Bradley Cooper where he's an Eagles fan? Whatever the hell the name of that movie was. That was good, too. So, Silver Linings Playbook. That was the name of it. And I feel like De Niro kind of got that sort of new lease on life with his career. But there was a stretch there where I felt like there were a lot of bad De Niro and Pacino movies. We'll just forget about that time period. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. George Lombard is the real deal. I think in all facets of the game. Defense is his calling card. That's his bread and butter. But offensively, George Lombard Jr. in a week has really shown you that it's on the same level as it has been defensively and his prowess there. What has impressed me the most, though, with George Lombard Jr., because you could tell when a guy has it, you could tell when a guy has presence, you can tell when a guy looks the part, and George Lombard Jr. is all of those things. To me, the maturity and the leadership that Lombard has shown, I mean, that story that came out over the weekend where Spencer Jones said that George Lombard Jr. was quizzing his teammates about the next day's starting pitcher. This is a rookie. This is a guy that's been up here for a week, and he's sitting down eating dinner instead of worrying about what he's eating or what's going on a Saturday night or the big victory or the back-to-back victories or sort of basking in the glory of debuting in the best possible way. George Lombard Jr. was worried about the next game and the next day's starting pitcher. And not only did he know about the next day starting pitcher as far as his pros and cons and ways to attack that pitcher, he was quizzing his teammates, which tells you he has a very high IQ, a very high baseball IQ. It tells you he eats, sleeps, and dreams about baseball, and that he is a natural-born leader. And George Lombard Jr. is everything all rolled up in the one, and he has been a very much a welcomed addition to this team. But to me, it's that leadership, it's that maturity, being wiser than his years. That's what has impressed me most about George Lombard Jr. He truly is the real deal. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Ken joins us from Manhattan. What's up, Ken?
First of all, I want to tell you what a great job you do. I used to work in radio, and if I was a program director, you'd be doing afternoons with Big Mac because you're really good.
Well, I appreciate all the kind words you said there, Kenny. Thank you.
Yeah, so two things. First about the Yankees and then about the lockout.
Okay.
So when it comes to the Yankees, my big issue with this team since Aaron Boone took over and as the years have gone on with Brian Cashman is that there is no accountability on management's part when players do not perform well. And it seems like Boone makes a lot of excuses for these players.
Definitely.
Over and over and over again. And I'm old enough to remember when Jim Leland and Lou Piniella were managing, and They made awful players good and good players great because they wanted to play for these managers. They respected them and they feared them. With Boone and Cashman, there's no consequence for poor play, and it boggles my mind.
Yeah, there's a coddling. There's almost a country club type of atmosphere that exists. Like you said, whether it's gaslighting, whether it's coddling the player, making up excuses for them, never criticizing them publicly, there is zero accountability. But you know what, though, Ken? Why would Aaron Boone show any accountability when there's no accountability for him or Cashman? There's zero accountability in the entire organization because they continue to not only run back the roster, but they run back Boone and Cashman all the time. So it's, and I've said this over and over again.
Why are they doing that?
Hal
Steinbrenner do that?
Yeah, I think because they're very happy with the way that they go about things every year, which means the place is packed. They win 90 something games. They're in October every year. They're a global brand, and they are content with being good. They no longer shoot to be great. They're content with being good or even very good. But they don't go that extra mile to be great anymore. They just don't. But they're very comfortable with that. They don't go the extra mile. Anyway.
No, it's just, if I'm a Yankee fan and I'm paying good money for tickets, it's like, I know television drives the boat at
this
point. At this point, when a quarter of your team is batting 200 or less, like, what are you rooting for? What I just don't understand how a guy who hits, like Austin Wells, hits 148, 150, Trent Grisham's hitting in the 200s. I don't understand how these guys are major league players. And I know why they sent Anthony Volpe down, but at the same time, Volpe was hitting with a higher average than these other guys. It just it boggles my mind. Quickly on the lockout, I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
So these are millionaires playing for billionaires.
Yep.
And my question for you, my question for you is, if the Dodgers, which have become the platinum standard of Major League Baseball at this point, have endless money and they pay astronomical amounts of money to sign player after player after player, and other teams saw, like the Mets signed Soto, the Cubs play all these players.
Oh, Yankees.
How can they then turn around? And the Yankees. How can they then turn around and say, we're going to lock these players out over a salary cap when they're the ones that are awarding them for performance? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the whole thing, and I appreciate the kind words and the call, Ken. I think it's still going to be a salary floor than a salary cap. I don't think anybody involved wants a situation where any team like the Dodgers or the Mets or the Yankees, I don't think they want to limit their spending. You want to have teams spend like this. You just want more competitive balance where, now, I was going to use Pittsburgh as an example, but they did spend in the offseason. And look, Milwaukee, Tampa, they don't do a lot of spending, but they're both in first place. You just want to see teams that kind of take that money that they get and then put it in their pocket. You want to see them put it into the product. And even if they can't match with the Dodgers and the Mets, and that's okay. But you're spot on with the billionaires and millionaires. And that's why I think it would just be such a catastrophic mistake for baseball to lock out and to miss an entire year. Catastrophic mistake. And I don't think either side is dumb enough to do that. You know, there's a lot of ways. This isn't back in the day where there's six channels on the TV and nobody had the internet. And I'm not saying, hey, I say this slight, not, it's hyperbolic. I admit that as I'm about to say it. But you know what? Hey, baseball's gone. I'll go turn on the Savannah Bananas. You know what? It's entertaining. They dance. They do backflips. My kids love it. I'm not saying every fan, you lose a million fans, but you might lose some. There's a lot of options out there, whether it's radio, whether it's podcasting, whether it's sports. Out of sight, out of mind. And when it's greed involved, look about baseball when they, you know, in the 90s. That was very damaging. And the only way they got back is they had to look the other way when it came to the steroids because they needed something to spark their sport. Which then turned into decades long of discourse to where we're still feeling the ramifications of it, where certain guys that should be in the Hall of Fame are not. And baseball has to do this delicate dance of where they're all holier than thou about certain players that go in the Hall of Fame. Meanwhile, everybody was sitting there with the pom-poms out when McGuire and Sosa and Bonds and all these guys were hitting mammoth home runs. But baseball created that by their greed. And to do it again, and there's a lot of purists that don't like the current product, you're going to lose them because they're at their last wits. Like, all right, okay, pitch clock, fine. Too many strikeouts, fine. Starters not going nine innings, fine. Extended postseason, fine. All this stuff, fine. You've taken away the baseball that I grew up loving, fine. But now you're going to take away baseball, period? I just don't think either side is dumb enough to do that, because you will lose fans and you'll lose momentum. Baseball's had a lot of momentum. The numbers are up. The attendance is up. I'm not saying they don't have valid reasons to go to the table and change the way certain teams spend money, but to lose an entire year would be devastating for the sport. Devastating. And it's not something that I think is going to happen. And if it were to happen, it would take years for baseball to recover. Years. And they pulled the rabbit out of their hat in the late 90s with all the guys that were, you know, juiced up hitting home runs. You don't always have that rabbit to pull out of the hat to bring your sport back. Especially with the way the economy is right now. Billionaires fighting with millionaires. You are going to lose the court of public opinion, in the court of public opinion, every single time. I don't care if you think there's collusion going on and you think that, well, if we make the Dodgers win again, then the public will be on our side, the owner's side. Forget that. Yeah, there'll be some, but there'll be a lot that say, you know what, I just want to see my baseball. Figure out a way to get it to me by April. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. Let's head out to Connor. Connor, he joins us in Huntington. What's going on, Connor?
Tommy, how do you, man? Hey. How are you? We've spoken once or twice, actually, before. The
good
last time, I think,
again,
was when the U.S. men's hockey team won, is right before they won the gold medal.
Wow.
But,
so it's been a
well,
minute.
Man.
Yeah, same as you. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, buddy. So, listen, I'm a gigantic Knicks fan. So are all my friends. We're all local, like Long Island guys. Mm-hmm. And there's so many debates that go back and forth about the productivity of this management team of the Knicks. And some people back Carmelo Anthony as if like he was like a real, like as if he was a real position in like the rebuilding of like this organization, mm-hmm. which I would say never. Like I hated that trade more than anything on earth.
Yeah.
Like we gave away so many pieces. I really like I miss like so many players like from like that team. Carmelo forced the trade. And anyway, I wanted to get your piece and like your thought on like what if we did not do that trade? Okay. And Amare like was like the real face of the Knicks at that time, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and I appreciate the call, Connor. You know, in a weird way, I believe in sports fate when it comes to the Knicks. And I think that everything that they went through from the glory days of the 90s, although, I mean, they seemed like glory days because it was better than what was, you know, coming down the pike. But in reality, the Knicks didn't win championships in the 90s. And this is a franchise that had won championships. But for people my age, yes, the 90s were the glory years. And something that a lot of people clutched like pearls for years when, look, they don't win anything. So it's hard for me to hold the team up to such a high standard when they don't ultimately win the biggest prize in the game. But after the 90s Knicks, everything that they went through, Isaiah Thomas and Phil Jackson and Carmelo Anthony and LeBron going to Miami, and the Fugazi series, and Roy Hibbert, and the Heatles, and Jerome James, and all these washed up guys that they brought in, and a prince that was promised in KP that ultimately didn't end up working out here. On and on and on. Bad draft picks, all that, the Knicks being a joke, and just the worst franchise, certainly in basketball, arguably in all of sports. All of that, in my mind, somehow led to, right? It's like you're dating around forever, and then finally you meet the one. You're Ted Mosby, right? You have to go through all the, you have to go through all these girls until you finally meet the mother. I almost spoiled the ending of How I Met Your Mother. I held back there. Number one, I know Alison Tron's coming up next, and if Al hasn't seen the Marvel movies, then he unlikely has not seen How I Met Your Mother. And the last thing I want to do is spoil the ending to that show. But I almost did there. I had to catch myself. I had to catch myself because I have a strong take on the ending. A lot of people do, but yeah, you know, Ted Mosby, you know, he had a good, and this part I'm not spoiling because the show is literally called How I Met Your Mother. So I would think that even if you haven't seen How I Met Your Mother, you understand that at some point he, in fact, meets the mother of his children. But he had to go through all of that to, right, to, again, don't want to give things away. But so it's sort of the thing of, hey, the Knicks had to go through all of that. They had to find out how to meet their mother, and their mother ended up being Jalen Brunson. And it ended up being Leon Rose. It ended up being this championship. So they had to go through all the slop, all the just horribleness. Have you seen it? Ever. Even on a long flight? Okay. All right. Because I spoiled the ending of Endgame for you, which I still feel horrible about. I know. Have you been able to still watch it, though? But you haven't given up on it because of me, though. It's more about a time thing. Okay, good, good. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I'm sitting here talking about Endgame and Fliegelman, and I hate throwing him under the bus, but, you know, I don't like spoiling things on the air, and Fliegelman kind of nudged me to talk about something that happens at the end of Endgame, which I don't want to say here for those that haven't seen it, even though I ruined it for Al. And I had no idea that Al has just started watching all of them in succession, and he had not gotten up to Endgame. And now I kind of... I ruined it, but here's the bottom line. The movies are amazing. And even if you know something that happens at the end of one of them, it doesn't take away from the amazingness. Now, here's why I'm still not going to talk about the ending of it. Because there could be an Al Cintron out there listening that is either in the middle of watching How I Met Your Mother. It's obviously in, what's the word, where it's on repeats or on all the time. And or you could just be watching it on a streaming service. So I don't want to give away the ending and I don't want to give my strong take on it. That's the delicate dance we have to do here on the radio. You know what I mean? Even as far as reacting to a game, you could have DVR'd it, and I could be spoiling it for you. Spoiler alert, the Mets won tonight, 8-5. Kodai Senga got his first save of his major league career, and Carson Bench took that ball that was the final out and threw it into the stands, which, look, it's an innocent thing, but Kodai Senga and Francisco Alvarez had a tremendous response. Like, what are you doing with the baseball? Why'd you throw it in the stands? And hopefully, Kodai, I haven't checked, double-checked here on the internet, but I would imagine whoever caught that baseball will give it to Kodai Senga. We'll give it back to the Mets, and Kodai will be able to have that as a memory. And listen, it could be the first of many saves. This could be a new role for Kodai Senga as the closer of this team because Devin Williams is on the shelf, and there is a runway, there's an opportunity for somebody to step up and be the closer of the Mets down the stretch here. And that man could be Kodai Senga. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan. We'll wrap up with the final segment of the night. Whatever's on your mind. It could be Knicks. It could be Giants, Jets, Mets, Yankees. We'll bang through some calls as we hand off to Al Cintron coming your way at midnight. The phone number to join the conversation is 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer. Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan. We were talking about the ending to How I Met Your Mother, and Al brought up a great point, and I've said this, not necessarily about a series finale, but often the final season of a show, and that is, it's very hard to stick the landing on a show ending, and more often than not, we as the viewers are disappointed with a series finale, or even the final season. It's just, it's very difficult to say goodbye, or in this case, stick the landing. And one of the shows that I brought up, and I can't fully remember exactly the way the show ended, but for me, a show that never got, like, all of my favorite shows, there were seasons I liked maybe before the final season, but The Wire, to me, never lost its fastball, really from start to finish. It's one of the best written shows of all time. Everybody that was in it was just amazing, all the different characters, unbelievable. It's in my top five. And that was one of the rare shows where when it was over, I just was felt satisfied with everything that they put forth out there. Everything. But it's difficult to have a... I was talking to Pete Hoffman, before the show, and he hates this new season of House of Dragon. Now, I only watched the first season, so I can't speak to the second or third, but he was trashing the third season. I just wrapped up the second season, which is the last season until they put out a third season of Fallout with Walton Goggins. Now, I find myself at times drifting a little bit on the show, meaning at times I'm slightly bored. And maybe that's because I am binge watching it, which is always the preferred for me is to binge watch. and maybe after three or four in a row, by the fourth, I'm a little bit out of gas, and I probably should just take a break, but I end up going on my phone or scrolling through my fantasy team or checking out Twitter or going on Sydney Sweeney's Instagram account, whatever the case may be, Ella Langley's Instagram account, you know, the things I do a daily routine. Some of you brush your teeth, I do too, but I also check out what's going on there on Instagram. And I'm bored by the show, but overall, I think it is good. There are just moments where I'm a little bit taken away from it. By the way, I'm watching myself on the TV right now. There's a commercial that runs on SNY. I don't know I've seen this one before for WFN where they show all the shows. And your boy is the last one there, After Hours. Good little shot of me there, too. I like it. Good little picture you got there. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. The Mets have the best offense in baseball over the last week, and it's been beautiful to watch. They are first in basically every single statistical category in the last week. Runs, home runs, OPS, slugging. This offense has been red hot. Lindor with the big night, Bichette with the big night the other night. Carson Bench has been a monster in August. AJ Ewing has been just, in the best way possible, rock solid as the leadoff hitter. Jared Young is putting together, I know he was hurt for a bunch, but Jared Young putting together a nice little season when he's been out there. Beatty with the big night tonight. This offense is clicking on all cylinders right now, and it's a big reason why the Mets are on the streak that they're on. It's been beautiful to watch. The Mets currently have the best offense in all of baseball. The last week, they are statistically number one in every single important category. There have been a lot of positives with this team over the last week, but the biggest positive collectively has been their offense, which has been absolutely unbelievable, a joy to watch, a beauty to watch. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. And speaking of that offense, Francisco Lindor, and we talked about this for weeks, Francisco Lindor, and he's going to prove it down the stretch here, and he's going to prove it for the rest of his Met career. The Mets did the right thing not moving Francisco Lindor. They shouldn't have traded him. They were not really in a position to trade him. The right thing to do was keeping Francisco Lindor. He had the monster game tonight, and I expect, like I said a couple of weeks ago, for Lindor to have a tremendous, impactful final couple of months of this season. He is a pillar on this team. He's one of the stars of this team. Francisco Lindor wasn't going anywhere. I don't think he is going anywhere. He is still a big part of the present and future of this team. And when it comes to the Mets, I'm positive that the future is bright. I love everything that I've seen out of Lindor lately. And look, early in the year, unexplainable. Just one of those years, injuries played a part of it. But now Lindor is healthy. He's clicking. And he is going to be, I believe, a force over the final couple of months of this year. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. And you just got to be so pleased with the way the Mets are playing. And I talked about it, you know, earlier in the year. I talked about it at the midway point of the year, this idea of chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. Look, the Astros got off to a horrific start. They're now in the division lead. We know with the Red Sox, the kind of heater they're on. No need to get ahead of ourselves, but just look at it as night in, night out, chip away, play good baseball, continue this hot streak. Anytime you're on a heater, whether it's at the craps table, whether it's gambling on sports, whether it's just in life, I don't know, maybe, you know, you're going out and picking up women, whatever the case may be. When you're on a hot streak, when you're on a heater, you ride that wave as long as you possibly can. And right now, the Mets offense is on a all-time heater because they are number one across the board in everything. And you could sit down every night, turn on the Met game, and there is something, whether it's the defense of Ewing, the defense of Bench, the offense of both of those players, Lindor, this young pitching staff, this bullpen, which is fun to watch because there's a lot of guys basically trying out for spots, which is cool to see. And that competitiveness, look, the iron sharpens iron, where no roles are determined now with Devin Williams out, so the closer role is opened up, and perhaps Kodai Senga can step in there and be that guy and take over that role as the closer of this team for the final stretch. And he got his first save of his career tonight, and Carson Bench took the ball and threw it into the stands, which is, you know, funny. But hopefully they can recover the baseball. And Kodai Senga could have that as a memory. And listen, it might not be the final save of his career. Because with Williams out with a right shoulder strain, you now have, and look, it's retroactive for a couple days ago, but still, I mean, Devin Williams is going to be out for a little bit here, and it opens up the door for somebody to step up and be the closer, be the guy in the ninth inning. And the way the Mets are playing baseball right now, that pitcher is going to get a lot of opportunities because I expect a strong, strong final push here for the Mets to wrap up the year. And the schedule is difficult, but I think this team is up for the challenge. They seem relaxed. They seem loose. And winning will do that. And offensive production will do that. And it can be contagious. With strong finishes from Lindor and Bichette and Jaron Young pitching in, with Beatty pitching in, and then the youngsters obviously in Ewing and Bench, and you're going to get Juan Soto back. He basically told you that he's going to return this year, so the lineup is going to look even better with Soto back in it. There's a lot to like about the Mets, not only currently, not only over the next couple of months, but for years to come. Now, this is an interesting story here that I just came across. Baywatch, obviously. I need to tell you about Baywatch. I mean, if you don't know anything about Baywatch, kids, look it up. Baywatch alum, Erica, I may butcher her last name, so I apologize. Aleniak, she is going on OnlyFans, which a lot of people, you know, it's not necessarily always just people in the adult film world. I mean, anybody can go on OnlyFans. She is joining OnlyFans, and apparently she's promising plenty of pictures of her feet. I've half-jokingly talked about this as far as WFAN because OnlyFans is extremely lucrative. I mean, people go on OnlyFans and they become like a millionaire overnight. There's obviously, I know sometimes they call me Tommy Thirst Traps. There are certain thirsts that have no quenching. And I mean, think about that. You could become like a millionaire in a month. I often thought about if we here at WFAN created an OnlyFans account, would there be a market for pictures of Al Dukes' feet, or pictures of Evan's feet, or a picture of one of the hosts here's tuchus? Would our fans pay for that? Because you always want to be taken inside the curtain, right? And maybe it doesn't even necessarily have to be anything of the foot variety or the bare ass variety. Maybe that's a little bit too much for you. But just something that we were doing here to, you know, behind a paywall where you, the audience, would, and look, I don't want to just take money from the audience, but so just play along though. The idea that we have an OnlyFans account and how lucrative would that be for WFAN? I think it would be. I think it would be. We obviously have a massive audience and OnlyFans has taken off. It's crazy. People are making just ridiculous amount of money on there. And I see it almost on a daily basis. Like, I feel like you can't go like 2 feet without, oh, this actress joined OnlyFans, and this person joined OnlyFans, and this person made $1 million on OnlyFans, and this person is on OnlyFans, and why are we WFAN missing out on the party? We should create a WFAN OnlyFans account. And we could do it in tiers, where obviously, you know, the bigger names here I think would be bigger draws, and then kind of work our way down. I'll take pictures of my feet and post them on the internet. That's fine. You want to take a look at my feet for $100? You can. I'll give you my Venmo account. No problem doing that. I have beautiful feet, by the way. Tremendous feet. I keep them well manicured. Now, my wife has often tried to get me to go get a mani and a pedi. And it's not that I'm anti-mani, anti-pedi. It's more just, it just hasn't happened. We would go for a couple massages back in the day. The problem with that is, look, we go in there, we get the couple's massage, which means we're both in the same room, but she's getting a massage from one person, I'm getting a massage from the next person. And I will be as honest as I can be with you here. And no, it's nothing nefarious, but I am a little bit of a weakling when it comes to massages. I don't want anything close to a deep tissue massage. It hurts. And I don't find the pain to be either A, satisfying, or B, help. Like a nice little massage is fine, but those massages where you're basically getting the crap kicked out of you, don't sign me up for that. Where my wife, we'd be sitting next to her and she'd be like, she'd be you know, getting a massage, and she'd be like, harder, harder. And I'm like, where have I heard that before? No. Anywho, she would just be getting a massage, and she would want the massage to be really deep tissue. And first of all, I had to say, time out. That's my wife. Keep your hands off her. And that one. And number two, jeez, I'd feel like I'm sitting there basically holding my breath, trying not to have, as you know, a situation pop up, because that could be embarrassing, especially with the wife in the room. And meanwhile, she's getting a massage, and she needs that deep tissue one where they're getting in on the bone. They're getting in on our organs. And I'm sitting there like, I'm in pain, and I'm getting the surface-level massage. But I've never done the mani and pedi with her. But I have beautiful feet. They're gorgeous. And I wonder out loud, if we start an OnlyFans account around here at WFN, if pictures of my feet or pictures of Evan Roberts' feet are probably an adventure. Let's be honest. They have to, that's like going to Disneyland, seeing pictures of Evan Roberts' feet. There's got to be a lot going on there. A lot of things that you're not expecting. That I haven't seen that on the everyday feet picture, and Evan has that. Probably a lot of hair, a lot of freckles, a lot of weird things going on there. Toe cheese, you know what I mean? Probably has a situation where some of the toenails are clipped properly, and then he has like one toenail that's longer, like obnoxiously longer than the rest. And he was probably in the middle of clipping his toenails, but then he had to go post a podcast, so now one of them is super long. Now, I bite my fingernails, full disclosure. I do not bite my toenails. I don't have that type of flexibility, but fingernails, it's a horrible habit. Very bad. I've tried to get away from it, but I haven't been able to. But the toenails, I keep very manicured. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. The final segment here of After Hours, I'll hand it off to Alson Tron, coming your way at midnight. You know, Kodai Senga has an opportunity here to be the closer for the Mets for the rest of the season, or for as long as Devin Williams is out. And this was the first save of Kodai Senga's career tonight, but it might not be the last. And Kodai Senga, much like a Sean Manaea, based on his performance this year, you felt like, all right, he could be an odd man out, he could be DFA'd, he could be traded, he could be out of here. And Manaea's turned it around, and now Senga has an opportunity to join Sean Manaea in the turn it around sort of category for the Mets. And this new opportunity that has presented itself, this could fit Kodai Senga like a glove. This could be, like I said, the first of many. And now with this sort of new lease on life, this new role on the team, this new opportunity for a red-hot Met team, this could end up being the first of many for Kodai Senga as far as saves. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It's After Hours. Little programming note, I will be back on tomorrow after the Mets and Yankees. So after the Yankees, both are playing, but after the Yankee postgame. So Seattle comes into town, and look, they're gutless, they're heartless, they're spineless. They've had one of the worst, most underperforming or underwhelming seasons of anybody in the American League. Major disappointment. You go to the ALCS last year, and then you fall flat on your face. This year, an incredible disappointment. I think they're going to be ready, made to order for the Yankees. They lost three in a row, got swept by Tampa. The Yankees will take full advantage of Seattle. But game number one is tomorrow night, and I'll be on after that. So looking forward to that. We'll do more football. We did a lot tonight as far as the preseason, and look, I'm here for it. It's a itch to scratch. If you are like me and you miss football, which how could you not? And that has nothing to do necessarily. Like, the Knicks won a championship. It's more just about football. It's just got a very special place in all of our hearts.